Welcome to Across the Margin Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Shields. Across the Margin Podcast is a proud member of the Osiris Media Group. Check out everything they get going on over at OsirisPod.com. There's a new season of the best show ever. There's new podcasts all the time, new live events. That is at OsirisPod.com. In this episode, I present an interview with music journalist and author, Catherine Yeske Taylor. Catherine began her career as a rock critic in Atlanta in the 1990s, interviewing Georgia musical royalties such as the Indigo Girls, R.E.M., and the Black Crowes while still a teenager. Since then, she has conducted several hundred interviews and contributes regularly to Billboard, Flood, Spin, and American Songwriter, among others. She's a longtime New York City resident and is extremely active in the downtown rock scene. Her book, She's a Badass, explores women in rock shaping feminism. It's a must read and the focus of this episode. Feminism has always been a complex and controversial topic, as female rock musicians know especially well. When they've stayed true to their own vision, these artists have alternately been adored as role models or denounced as bad influences. Either way, they're asked to cope with certain pressures that their male counterparts haven't faced. With each successive feminism movement since the 1960s, women in rock have been prominently proponents of progress as they've increasingly taken control of their own music, message, and image. This, in its way, is just as revolutionary as any protest demonstration. In She's a Badass, Catherine interviews 20 significant women in rock, devoting an entire chapter to each one, taking an in-depth look at the incredible talent, determination, and often humor they need to succeed in their careers and life. Interviewees range from legendary artists through notable up-and-comers, including Ann Wilson of Heart, Gina Shock of the Go-Go's, Suzanne Vega, Amy Ray of the Indigo Girls, Amanda Palmer, and more. Their experiences reveal the varied and unique challenges these women have faced, how they've overcome them, and what they think still needs to be done to continue making progress on the equality front. Their stories prove that promoting feminism, either through activism or by living example, is undeniably badass. So in this episode, Catherine and I talk about the inspiring and eclectic interview subjects found in She's a Badass, while considering all the varying struggles they each have faced in a male-dominated music industry. We discuss how feminism has always been a complex and complicated topic, the attributes that propelled the passionate musicians in Catherine's book to success, the importance of allyship, and so much more. Get out there and grab a copy of She's a Badass. You'll learn so much about the most inspiring and influential people in all of rock. And learn more about it in this interview with Catherine Yeske Taylor.
Across the margin. Podcast.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm pumped. This is great.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
The book is fantastic. I loved it. There's so many deep dives into so many artists that I knew about, some I didn't know about. It was really, really in-depth and fun. You know, it opened my mind to a lot of things that I knew were problematic, but kind of didn't know the depth there. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on and to talk about this. I'm really pleased that it's male journalists as well as female journalists who are interested in this book.
Oh, cool. That's great. I'm glad to hear that. To kind of kick us off, I'm curious, kind of the thought process and kind of your aim behind choosing your interview subjects. It was such a eclectic and super inspiring group of musicians. What were you hoping to looking for when you reached out to people?
Well, I started off thinking that I wanted to focus on rock music specifically, because in my career, I've interviewed artists from across the spectrum, you know, everything from country to pop to, you know, just all kinds of genres. But it seemed to me that rock music is really kind of lagging behind and always has compared to the other genres in terms of women's equality. If you turn on a country music station nowadays, for example, you'll hear it's about half and half female artist, male artist, and that's still not the case in rock music. So that's what I wanted. And then as I started thinking about actual subjects, I thought I want to have across the spectrum of rock music, because within that genre, it's very broad. I wanted mainstream, I wanted underground, I wanted punk, I wanted, pop rock, that kind of thing. And then I started thinking who I've interviewed over the years who had interesting things to say. So I approached them first, such as Ann Wilson, such as Suzanne Vega, people like that. And then once they said yes, that was about two-thirds of the book. And then the other third was people that I've always kind of wanted, but maybe haven't necessarily had a chance to talk to before, such as Exene Cervenka of X. Or Amanda Palmer. So it just kind of fell into place as I narrowed it down throughout the process.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, kind of going across those different groups of rock, it really kind of showed this through line of what people were experiencing in rock, whether it's punk or what. And I guess that's another fun thing to say. It's super general question, but I mean, what women have faced in the music industry, I think I didn't realize how profound it was. I knew it was super problematic, but I think it'd be interesting because you laid out terrifically in this book through all these interviews what so many people have faced, and it'd be fun, interesting to hear, what are some of those struggles that have been consistently that you found throughout these interviews?
Just a certain level of disrespect, I would call it.
Well
One
put.
of the things that is lingering problem to this day is the woman telling me about going into music clubs to play a show and having the staff, who are predominantly male, just act like they don't know how to work their own equipment. Things like that, where it's just kind of basic systemic problems, of respect, I would say. And it kind of filters into more severe cases of, not respecting their physical boundaries. There are stories of women getting actually grabbed, groped, things like that. The good news is, I think, in general, the problems are getting better just because society has less tolerance for these things now than it did, say, 50 years ago, which, the stories that Susie Quattro and Ann Wilson and Gina Shock of the Go-Go's told me about their days starting off in the 70s and early 80s, some of those things I just think would absolutely not be tolerated now. Whereas when they went and complained to someone about some promoter doing something like that, even to their own management or record companies, the response often was back then, well, that's just the way it is. Can't do anything about it. And I don't think that's really the response, in large part now.
Yeah. And I guess you can also look at it as so much of the work and passion and just kind of laying the groundwork that some of the people you just mentioned did really, really help change things in a major way. And obviously, a lot of work to do. It was very interesting to read about the pushback on feminism from some of these people you were interviewing, and just it just kept coming up that like I don't like the label, and you described it as a complex and controversial topic, and that was super fascinating to me. I didn't realize how many artists that were I saw as feminists didn't like the label. Why is it so complex and controversial?
Because it's come to have such a negative connotation. And you can go into all the reasons why that is. There's some people who don't want it to exist, so they're going to badmouth it, and that's going to contribute to it. But these women also pointed out that the problem can come from within as well. A couple of the women who expressed problems with that label said, look, the women's movements don't reflect my own opinions or feelings. They got way too strident. It got way too militant. It got into male bashing territory, all that kind of thing that they just didn't agree with. And it's not that these women who said they didn't want to be called feminists don't agree with gender equality. It's really more that they disagreed with the way that it should be approached to rectify it.
It was interesting to learn more about the because I think a lot of us are well versed in the feminism in the 60s and 70s, but you talk about and really get into this another type of feminism happening when women artists started pursuing their careers as they saw fit. And kind of when did that start, or maybe who with that did that start with?
I think it started a lot with Susie Quatro, who is the artist who kicks off this book. And a lot of people in America aren't familiar with her, but she's still a superstar in Europe and Australia. For whatever reason, she just never really made it really big here as a music star, although people may remember her from her role as Leather Tuscadero on Happy Days. But she was really the first female rock star who led her own band, who played her own instrument. She plays the bass, who wrote her own songs. You know, it could be argued that, you know, as popular as someone like Janis Joplin was before her, or Grace Slick, they really didn't do that. So Susie Quatro was the first one who really had international success doing those things. Yes, that's 50 years ago, but if you think about it, you know, that's 20 years into rock music being a popular thing. So why did it take so long? And so there's always been this kind of lag in what male artists have been able to do compared to what female artists have been kind of allowed to do by the system.
And I'm glad I kind of was hoping to steer us towards Susie a little bit there, because I just thought it was fascinating to learn more about her. I got to say, there's some gaps in my knowledge being over here in the United States when I was seeing how big a deal she was. It was amazing. But you really got into, through the interview with her, kind of what made her so special, what fueled that fire. I mean, she had great quotes, but, you know, the strength comes from the inside. Women do have balls, they keep it in their head where they don't get kicked. And she's just, there
Yeah.
was this
I
power.
love Susie.
She's awesome, right? So I guess that's the question. What makes her so special? What in her life, because it is brought up, what in her life kind of led her to being this powerhouse that she is?
Right. Well, with all these women, I dug really deep into their childhoods because I thought this will really show me why they have the attitudes that they do. And, you know, the ones that I disagree with personally, it kind of helped me to see, okay, well, I still don't agree with you, but I can see how you arrived at that conclusion, that type of thing. So in Susie's case, and in a few others in this book, it really seemed to come from having a really solid family background where they were supportive of her. She had a father who really encouraged her to play and believed that she was going to be able to accomplish just as much as any son could have. And that really seems to be a strong factor in these women's future success, whether or not they had a father who felt that way. There are some women in the book whose fathers definitely did not feel that way. I will point to Lydia Lunch as a really prime example of that, whose father was actually quite abusive toward her. And in that case, you know, it was a situation of her fighting back against someone like that, kind of an attitude of, well, oh yeah, I'll show you. So really, it seems like family, for better or for worse, is a really crucial factor in determining what kind of drive these women were going to have.
Yeah, it was interesting to see how you know, so many people who had music in their home growing up, you know, Ann Wilson's choir parents, you know, Gina's parents, you know, that was a drummer. Just if you had music in your home and people supported the music, that led something. It was also interesting to see how place, because you did dig into their childhood so thoroughly, how place attributed things. You know, Detroit made Susie Telfer. I mean, I guess Toby was a different case. Where was she? Is it Nacine, Washington? That's a
Nazelle,
they sell
yes.
those unique
Susie,
place.
excuse me, Toby Vail of Bikini Kill, yeah, had her formative years in a very small town in what sounds like a very bleak corner of Washington State.
Yeah, logging industry kind of running the show there. That was interesting. But place seemed to really speak to, you know, another thing that kind of gave them their influence and inspiration.
Yeah, definitely. And I was interested at the number of women who came from small towns like Toby or Exine, who spent a large part of her childhood in a small town in Illinois. The ones who said, look, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, and in a way that really helped their creativity because they were forced to look inward for entertainment, essentially. And it just kind of led them to really develop their creativity, which really served them well in later life.
Yeah, It was interesting to see the other things that I was drawn to what was propelling artists. And Anne Wilson talked a lot about instincts and just to kind of like what she believed would be the difference between women and men in certain ways, and how women are deep in an emotional and you know, it's their instincts, and that's why, you know, what they bring to songwriting and rock. I'd love to hear a little bit, because I know you mentioned you interviewed Anne before, kind of what made her special, because that's a great chapter as well.
Anne is the singer for Heart, who, had many hits in the 70s. They were really the first hard rock band. They were a hard rock band when they started to have major hits with things like Barracuda and Crazy on You and things like that. And her stories really show just how important it is to keep going despite negativity. She's got stories of, playing early shows in places like bars in Montana, where some guy would come up and just say horrible things to her about her appearance, or just suggest that, she really wasn't a full-fledged member of the band, but more of like a plaything kind of, the whole groupie stereotype rather than a member of the band. And her story, I think, is really interesting because she was in a band with her sister. And so it really showed how strong family ties can really be helpful. And also, she was in a band with men and showed how it's important to have allies, because a lot of the times when those horrible things would happen, the men in the band would step up and confront the guy too. It wouldn't just be her fighting back against this guy on her own. It would be her bandmate or her manager or someone like that, making it clear that this kind of behavior wasn't acceptable. And, like it or not, as much as I think some women really would like to fight this battle on our own and prove that we can do it on our own, I think we do need people across the gender spectrum fighting back against this kind of treatment, or we're never going to really achieve true equality.
Yeah, I mean, that leads me to, I love the chapter. I'm a big fan of Amanda Palmer. She mentions kind of this allyship multiple times. She credits that the teacher, or it was probably the theater instructor who helped her perform on stage during that intermission of Carousel. Absolutely love that story. That was interesting. But also she talks about the allyship with Brian Viglione from, you know, Dresden Dolls, and what that meant. She described him as having feminist values. And so I think she saw, which was really cool hearing from her, that, you know, the importance of what you're talking about. What was it like learning more about Amanda Palmer and her story?
Oh, Amanda is great. In fact, I'm going to do an event with her on April 20th at her venue in Woodstock, New York.
Oh,
So,
that's incredible. Cool.
It's going to be great. But Amanda was one of those women that I've always wanted to interview just because she's so outspoken and so fearless, and she works outside the system in a way. She does things through Patreon instead of a traditional record company model. And so that means that she has total freedom. She doesn't have to answer to a boardroom full of executives. She can do whatever she thinks is best. And so that makes her really uncommon. I mean, that's still not a typical way for an artist to do it. And you're right, like she really had some important things to say about the male allies in her life. And it's good because she's clearly a really strong and tough woman, but she makes it clear that she still will take help where she can get it. She has a book called The Art of Asking, and that's basically the thesis of that book is, you have to ask people for help sometimes, and don't be afraid to do that. And so I think that's a really powerful message because I think that sometimes women in particular think that in order to prove that you're strong, you have to carry the burden on your own. You have to do everything on your own. And it's just not necessary to do that to effect change, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I was noticing here and there too was this, where the artist, as they were kind of growing up and coming into their art, they, in certain cases, they weren't overthinking gender. In many cases, they just assumed that they could do it in the same. I mean, Exene was a good example. She's never saw an issue in the punk scene. With that, which I was a little bit surprised about, but
Well, it
Some of
depends
them.
who you ask, because some people would say some of them had conflicting stories about the same scene. Like Maxine said, she never saw these problems, but Danita Sparks, who came up in the same LA scene, said she did. So there's
That's
some
not
conflicting stories.
absolutely. But there was also other artists. I think Gina mentioned it too, how she never thought, and I think it was, we talked about a little bit with the family and being inspired there. They just never thought they couldn't do it, or couldn't do what a man would do. And there's a power in that as well, right? Just like just assuming that you have what it takes no matter what, and not overthinking that.
And that's always the attitude that someone like Chrissie Hynde of the Pretenders has always had. She has her own book, so she wasn't going to do this one. There were a couple people like that who already have their own book, like Debbie Harry. Why would they do a chapter in mine when they already have their own book?
That's
But this is kind of the attitude of some people where, it just doesn't matter, so I'm just not even going to discuss it. But as some women in this book point out, you can have that attitude, but it's not going to stop certain people from throwing up roadblocks in your way anyway. That you can say gender doesn't matter, but the fact is, when you're a young female artist and you're out on the road and you're not successful yet enough to be able to afford a road crew, it's a very dangerous thing compared to being a man in the same situation. I mean, traveling on highways late at night, playing venues where you're surrounded by people who probably have had a little too much to drink a lot of the time, stopping in gas stations at odd hours, staying at dodgy motels. I mean, these are all things that are inherently more dangerous for women than for men, because, like it or not, we are smaller, we aren't as physically strong. We do face much, much more risk of being in danger than male peers. And so I can see both sides, is what I'm saying. I can see how there's value in saying, like, it just doesn't matter, and I'm not going to let you make it matter. But there's some things in reality that I think women have to face also.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Was it fun as someone piecing this whole book together to see how much these subjects who of your interviews were influencing each other? I mean, like Toby
Yes.
does Bikini Kill. She was like talking about how, the Go-Go's and Gina influence her when that music doesn't sound the same, but it kept having it over and over again. That had to be fun.
Yeah, it was fun because I didn't prompt that at all. I,
Oh, cool.
I did tell people, sometimes who else had agreed to be in the book, but I noted that nobody saw anybody else's chapters. Nobody knew what anyone else is saying. They're just seeing it at the same time as everyone who's reading it now, because I didn't want
Cool.
anyone influencing anybody else in terms of what they said. And it was interesting to have certain people say, like Toby Vail said, Gina Schock influenced her. So I think she'll be tickled to see that they're in the same book. Same thing happened in turn with Laura Veer saying that Toby influenced her. And yes, that just kept happening in this book. And I like that because it shows how important it is for young women to see other women in these positions in bands so that they know they can do it.
Totally, totally. I love that chapter about Toby. It was fun to learn about the birth of the Riot Girl movement, and also the how the fanzine Jigsaw, it really changed her life. That was really, really cool.
Yeah, I've had a few people say, well, why didn't you get Kathleen Hanna? Well, first of all, like I said a moment ago, Kathleen already has her own book. But also, Toby's story is really important. I mean, by many measures, she is the one who founded the Riot Girl movement. First of all, she coined the phrase Riot Girl. She founded the fanzines that gave rise to that movement. And a lot of people aren't aware that, before Bikini Kill, she was in bands. She played with Kurt Cobain in his pre-Nirvana days. And what she has to say about that is really important, because she wasn't just, a muse inspiring him. She wasn't just, the girlfriend. She was a full-fledged member of a band with him and had
Inspiring
in
each other on
influence
both
on
sides.
his music. Yeah. And so I think that's really important to acknowledge, and I don't think she's been given proper credit for that.
Well, you certainly did in your book. It was fantastic. What did it mean to have Susan Rogers write that excellent afterword for you?
Oh, I was so excited that Susan Rogers signed on to do this. For people
So
who don't
cool.
know, Susan Rogers is a really legendary recording engineer. Legendary for two reasons. First of all, she is one of the few female recording engineers in the business. Even now, it's still very rare to have a female recording engineer. And second of all, she was the in-house engineer at Paisley Park for Prince 40 years ago. I mean, and so that just tells you how forward-thinking he was. Yet another example of how forward-thinking he was. And so it's interesting to see her perspective in the afterword of this book as she kind of looks through the women's stories and kind of picks out different examples that she thinks are significant and then relates them to her own. And I was really honored that she agreed to do this. It really lent a lot of weight to this book, I think, to have her involved. That's why I mentioned it on the cover.
I understand that. I definitely would. I love her science background too. That she's just like a badass scientist as well. It was
And it really
interesting.
shows that, women in roles besides the musicians are really confronting this. And I hope I showed that in my introduction to the book too, where I talk about my own experiences as a journalist. It's not just the musicians up on stage getting heckled. There's these kind of issues that are happening for women across the board. And, as I'm out in the world talking to women about this book, it seems like, it's something that happens to women, whether they're in the music business or not. It's just something that happens. These things happen to women everywhere.
Across the board. I thought it was interesting that she mentioned that a common theme is in the book is that perpetrators didn't expect us to fight back. I was curious what you thought about that statement from her, because that's powerful.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why the Riot Girl movement really had such impact, actually, because it's the first time that women kind of had this cohesive movement where they fought back as a group. And before that, there were women fighting back, of course, but it wasn't like this united front kind of thing. And I think it really took the world by surprise. I think that's why it had such a seismic shift. And it, as Toby Vail points out, it's not a problem-free thing. I mean, that movement has been rightfully criticized as being too focused on the experience of middle-class white women. Needs to be much more inclusive. And so I think that it's good that we're examining those things now. But at the time, it really, in the 90s, it really was important in terms of moving the needle. And so if you look at it by today's standards, yes, it's problematic. But at the time, it really did serve an important purpose for its time.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was curious, kind of bring us home a little bit. I was inspired by the book in a lot of ways, and I think other people will be, and just I think artists in particular. But I was wondering what you hope artists or just any readers will take away from She's a Badass, and just like kind of what just yeah, just that. What do you hope they walk away feeling, thinking, wanting to do?
Well, I think the most important thing is that women realize, well, and their allies and people across the gender spectrum realize that, if you want to have certain rights, you do have to fight to get them and keep them. And I think that Toby Vail, I know we keep mentioning her chapter, but it really is an important
Great.
chapter. She has a really great quote in it where, she talks about this. After Bikini Kill went on hiatus, she returned to college and, and studied political science and all these things that had nothing to do with music history. And she came out with a really broad view of these things. And she has a really great quote to the effect of, progress isn't linear. It can go backwards and forwards. And you can never really let your guard down on these fronts. If you achieve some rights, you can't just relax and say, okay, well, that's done now. You have to keep fighting to maintain those rights. And I think that's a really important message because I think that's something that people forget. When I was doing the interviews for this book, it was right around the time when the Roe versus Wade ruling was being overturned, and people were so shocked that that was happening. But the women that I talked to for this book really weren't. They said, we kind of saw this coming because the things that needed to be done to uphold that weren't being done. So what did you expect, kind of thing. In a way, maybe that kind of thing is a good shock to the system in that it's going to now motivate people to work harder to maintain the rights we do have, not just look at you know, what can we do to further them, but what can we do to maintain what we have now?
Yeah, it feels almost exhausting. The fight for rights is just—it's just nonstop. But it's important, as pointed out there. What I love so much is that this book does also say how important role models are, and you just shine a light on just so many special role models throughout it, and you tell the story of so many of the most inspiring people in all of rock. It's a great, great book. I'm glad to have it land in my world. I'm glad to be able to talk about it and spread the word some. So thank you so much, Catherine. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on.
This podcast is In the Loop, the Legion of Osiris podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with live experiences and podcasts about artists and topics you love. Get in the loop at osirispod.com.